106.
This is Radio Times. I'm Jeff Brady, filling in for Marty Moscowain. We'll spend much of this hour talking about election results from yesterday's primary in Pennsylvania. But first, a federal judge ruled Pennsylvania's ban on same-sex marriage is unconstitutional. Joining us is Mark Aronchick. He's founding shareholder and litigator with the law firm of Hangley, Aronchick, Siegel, Pudlin, and Schiller. The firm worked with the ACLU to file the federal lawsuit that led to Tuesday's ruling. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hi. Good to talk with you.
And were you surprised by the decision yesterday, or is that exactly what you expected? It was certainly what you argued for.
Well, I'm not surprised at all by the decision, but I was overwhelmed and in awe of the way the judge issued it. It was really a bell ringer. It was one of the best crafted of all the decisions we've been seeing on this issue around the country.
Yeah, the language in Federal Judge John Jones's decision, it's definitely worth noting. He called the 11 lesbian and gay couples who were plaintiffs courageous, and then he ended that 39-page ruling with a sentence that I'm just going to quote directly because I don't think you can summarize it and do it justice. He said, quote, "We are better people than what these laws represent, and it is time to discard them into the ash heap of history." What do you think of that?
Well, when I read that, I actually had tears in my eyes and chills up and down, and I've been a lawyer for over 40 years, so it takes something special to produce that. What do I think? I think he's absolutely correct, and I think that's a historic statement. I think it'll be quoted and quoted again all over the country.
And is it unusual language for a judge to use in a decision?
No, not in these monumental civil rights cases that we've had in our country. Great judges rise and offer tremendous explanation and language, almost poetic sometimes, and certainly Judge Jones has risen to that level.
I've already seen critics of same-sex marriage calling this judicial activism. I think most notably I saw a press release from the American Family Association of Pennsylvania calling this judicial activism and pointing to that language as evidence of that.
Those kinds of complaints have been made so often, and they're actually getting tiring. I understand the passions from the opponents, but picking on judges who make forthright constitutional decisions is not the way to go. And, you know, there's been 13 federal court decisions just since Windsor last July. And so is the point that all 13 of these judges are off base or crazy activists? I hardly think so. And particularly when you look at the backgrounds of these judges, a lot of them were appointed by George W. Bush.
Judge Jones was appointed by President George W. Bush and had support from Senator Rick Santorum at the time. That's probably not what they were expecting when he was nominated.
Well, I think that gets to a more fundamental point that I hope the public understands. We have a great system, and the judiciary is part of it, and they are supposed to be independent. And whoever gets appointed puts their politics aside when they go to the bench, and they decide the cases on the merits, and particularly these very important central constitutional cases like the one yesterday. And so I am not surprised. Look, Chief Justice Earl Warren, when he decided Brown versus Board of Education, the seminal landmark civil rights opinion, was a Republican governor from California, appointed by Dwight Eisenhower. And we've seen this time and time again. It's the beauty of our constitutional form of government. It's the wonder of our federal judiciary. It's a model for the world. So it really, it should be exalted. Even if you lose, you lose in a case. But let's not tear down the federal judiciary in the process there. And Judge Jones should be lauded for what was a very impactful, powerful, and brilliantly crafted decision.
Well, let's get into some of the more pragmatic issues here. What does this decision mean for same-sex couples in Pennsylvania who want to marry now?
They can get married. The judge did not stay his ruling. The governor has not asked for a stay of the ruling. And law is the law. And we've seen this already. The Register of Wills in Philadelphia, Ron Donatucci yesterday stayed open late. Couples were going and getting their marriage licenses. It was a beautiful thing to see. It was a really important moment. I've said many times, and it was true, so true yesterday, that once we cleared out these laws that made no sense and just humiliated children of same-sex couples and showed indignity and disrespect, once we cleared that out, the public would understand that there's nothing to fear from this and everything to celebrate. And we certainly saw that yesterday.
What about couples who married in other states where same-sex marriages were already legal? What does this decision mean for them?
It means that their marriages are recognized in Pennsylvania and that they're equal to everyone else. We had a lot of different plaintiffs in our case, couples from all walks of life, all ages, all different kinds of backgrounds. And what was striking, but shouldn't have been surprising, is that these couples are a cross-section of Pennsylvanians generally. They're no different than anyone else who wants to get married, but for their sexual orientation. And all the reasons for the marriage vows and the public commitment are the same. And once people see that these are our citizens, our neighbors, our friends, in many cases our family members, and they want what everyone else wants, it is impossible for a citizen really and truly to say, I want to discriminate anyway.
And
why? That's just not right.
There are a few other cases dealing with this issue in Pennsylvania right now. How does this decision affect those other cases?
Well, I mean, there are separate cases. My guess is that it's going to have a powerful impact on the outcome of those cases. I hope those judges turn and address their cases rapidly, and I really hope that they come out in the same way. I think that, look, every court case that's issued since Windsor last July, I think we're up to 18 or 19 of them now, counting state and federal courts, has come out in the same way. And that doesn't surprise me.
And this particular decision, this is probably not the end of it, or may not be the end of it, if Governor Corbett decides to appeal within the next 30 days, right?
Well, of course it's not the end of it. If he decides to appeal, we'll go to the Third Circuit. We have a wonderful record in this case. We have as strong a record as any case in the country, and we'd be eagerly eager to present that case to the Third Circuit, but we hope we don't have to. We really hope that the governor decides not to appeal, to recognize that Judge Jones really spoke the truth here, and to put Pennsylvania in the proper place that it should be, which is, as with all of its neighboring, practically all of its neighboring states and so many other states in the country, recognizing and affording the dignity and respect to same-sex couples that they deserve under the Constitution.
Philadelphia attorney Mark Aronchick was among the attorneys who successfully challenged Pennsylvania's ban on same-sex marriages. Thank you for joining us on Radio Times here.
And thank you very much.
Now we turn to the primary election yesterday. We have two people who know Pennsylvania politics inside and out to help sort through the results. In the studio is Will Bunch. He's a senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, and he blogs about local and national politics at attitude.com, which if you're from Philadelphia, you might know how to spell that, attitude.com.
Yep. Wrong, T-O-O-D.
Oh, boy, it's misspelled on my... I'm sorry about that. Of course, I should have known that.
That's hilarious.
And on the phone, we have Thomas Baldino, professor of political science at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre and interim dean of the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Science. Welcome to Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning. I want to start by talking about the governor race. The Democratic primary was the big race a lot of people were watching. Tom Wolf won, got about 58% of the vote among Democrats. Alison Schwartz, about 18%, and Rob McCord, about 17%. Will Bunch, any surprises in those results?
Well, I mean, it depends how far you want to go back for your surprise. I mean, would this have been a surprise a year ago? It would have been shocking. You know, is it a surprise over what we've seen over the last 3 or 4 months? No. I mean, I think Tom Wolf ran a campaign that they'll probably be studying in political science textbooks years from now. I mean, it was whatever you think of Tom Wolf, the politician, his campaign as a strategy was brilliant in its execution. Of course, when I say brilliant, I guess we can all be a little bit more brilliant when we have $10 million of our own money to spend, of course. But he spent that money wisely. You know, I'll never forget watching the Super Bowl back in February, and when the local commercial segment came on in Super Bowl, there was an ad for Tom Wolf. I mean, and the thing is, people were not paying attention to the race. And so the conventional wisdom is you don't run ads when voters aren't focused, not paying attention. I mean, he turned the conventional wisdom on its head upside down by when nobody was paying attention and nobody knew who any of the candidates were. And Alison Schwartz is only well known really in Philadelphia, not so much in the rest of the state. And, you know, he made himself a name. He had, I mean, he was the kind of candidate and he had the kind of message that I think at least Democratic primary voters wanted to hear in Pennsylvania, which obviously helped. I mean, $10 million means nothing if you have the wrong message and the wrong messenger. But if you've been paying attention for the last few months, last night culminated in a non-surprise kind of.
And Thomas Baldino, he certainly, Tom Wolf certainly got out there with a lot of money and a lot of ads early on, was leading in the polls, never really left that position. And is there any evidence in the results from last night's election that some of those attacks that we saw near the end of the campaign, did any of those work?
Not that I could tell. And I concur with everything that Will just said, to the extent that Wolf ran a near-perfect campaign for someone with little name recognition across the state, but as Will noted, $10 million can buy you a fair amount of name recognition, right? But there was a certain confluence of events and conditions that just brought everything together for him. Given that Corbett had relatively poor standing in the polls, he's not terribly popular. He's identified in many ratings as among the most vulnerable Republican governors in the nation at the moment. You couple that with very, very positive ads that Wolf's people put together, and having them run during a rather empty time in politics, right? And sure. Then I read a really interesting.
Well, we're going to have to actually pick up. We're going to pick up this discussion after a break here in just a second. We're talking about the primary election, the results from yesterday's election. My guests are Will Bunch with the Daily News and Thomas Baldino from Wilkes University. If you have questions or you want to join the conversation, did your candidate win yesterday? 1-888-477-9499. Our email is radiotimes@whyy.org or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be back after a break.
The Friends Schools of Bucks County are committed to challenging minds and nurturing spirits to prepare students for life. Providing independent education from preschool through 12th grade, the Friends Schools of Bucks County include United Friends, Newtown Friends, Buckingham Friends, and the George School. Guided by Quaker values, these schools provide a core curriculum while fostering exploration, self-discipline, creativity, and a desire to learn. United Friends, Newtown Friends, Buckingham Friends, and the George School support WHYY.
This week in This American Life, what it's like for writer David Sedaris, living in France, struggling with the language.
This is my worst nightmare right here. Okay, my lighter has run out of fluid, which would mean that I would have to ask somebody for a match. And so what I would say is, hello, do you have some fire?
Americans in Paris, why the French may be right to hate us.
I will not spend the afternoon asking people if they have fire.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. As Natasha Trethewey ends her tenure as poet laureate, we'll get her thoughts on the form.
Well, isn't it wonderful that poetry gives us a way of saying exactly what we mean and meaning it, and meaning something else at the same time.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
It's the day after the primary election, and we're talking about what voters decided. I'm Jeff Brady. This is Radio Times. I'm sitting in for Marty Moskowain this week. In the studio, we have Will Bunch of the Daily News, and on the phone, we have Thomas Baldino from Wilkes University. You can join the conversation at 1-888-477-9499. The big news of the day, or the big news from the election last night, was Tom Wolf's victory in the Democratic primary. He delivered his victory speech last night, and I think some of the things that he said offer a hint of perhaps what his side of the campaign will sound like between now and November. Let's listen to what he had to say.
As Democrats, we can show a better future. We can show a future where we're not hollowing out our schools. We're actually investing in education. We have a future, yes, investing in education. How about that for a change?
He also mentioned that he wants to create good jobs right here in Pennsylvania and a level playing field for everybody. Will Bunch, does that sound like a campaign message plan right there?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I was actually talking with Terry Madonna, the pollster, last night, and he told me something I didn't realize, which is that in his polls, voters in Pennsylvania are now identifying education as the number one issue in this election. And he said, you know, in his quarter century of polling the state, he's never seen anything like that. And I think the reason you're seeing, well, I mean, one is just education is a big issue for a lot of people, obviously. But the other reason I think is there's a lot of lingering anger and resentment over, you know, what's perceived anyway as steep cuts to education by Governor Corbett. You know, the education funding dropped by about $1 billion his first year in office. There's a lot of quibbling about why that happened, but it did happen. You know, local voters know because of their property tax bills went up to pay the difference, or teachers were laid off. We've lost 20,000 education jobs in the state, and that's why you've seen the candidates talking so much about education, because I think Corbett's so vulnerable on the issue, and I think voters are craving a different approach on that.
And Tom, I noticed during that speech, Wolf spent a fair bit of time reminding folks of his party affiliation. I'm not sure exactly how many times he said he was a Democrat, or that we're all Democrats. But is there something in there? Do you see anything in that?
Well, I'm sure he's trying to remind people that he is a Democrat, given that that this is a closed primary state and only Democrats could vote for him in this election. So,
but in his victory speech leading off the general election, that seemed a little unusual to me.
A bit. But I think it's all about making sure that those Democrats or those Republicans who went to the polls and didn't see his name on the ballot now understand, if they watched the speech, that he is the Democratic nominee. And just to go back to the issue of education, for those people and citizens in my part of the state, the education issue is important as much for the substance of education and education policies and teachers and the like, but also because of the repercussions from cuts to the education budget at the state level that caused tax shifting to occur. Mm-hmm. So local school districts had to raise their taxes, and property taxes here are a very hot button issue. So when people hear education, it's not just thinking about the schools and what's going on in the schools. It's also how we fund schools. And there's a movement in this area to get the legislature to pass a bill that ends property taxes. And I'm sure that there'll be more discussions on that in the coming election season.
Could be part of the campaign. At one point during Wolf's speech, this was near the beginning of the speech, actually. He seemed a little confused about which camera he was supposed to be looking at. And he even stopped and he said, I'm supposed to be looking over here. I wondered, is that any indication of whether or not he's kind of ready for a primetime campaign? He ran a great primary campaign. Is he ready for this fight against Governor
Trump? You know, I would argue the opposite. I would say moments like that are part of Tom Wolf's appeal. You know, one thing, and I've seen this in so many elections over the years, is when voters are unhappy, and voters are unhappy probably two-thirds of the time, they're looking for the opposite of what they had before. And I think that's part of Wolf's appeal, is the fact that Corbett, I mean, Corbett's kind of a funny character. I mean, he was more of a prosecutor than a politician. But certainly when you look at Tom Corbett, he certainly looks the politician from Central Casting with the white hair, and you know he looks like he should be wearing a toga as a Roman senator or something like that. And Tom Wolfe, does not look like that at all. You know, he's bald. He's got a beard. You know, he looks so much like the former Peace Corps volunteer out of the 60s and early 70s that he was, and he's soft-spoken. He's not loud or forceful, and I guess he can be perhaps awkward politically in moments like that, but I think that's exactly what voters are looking for, and I think if anything he'd want to play that up almost, you know.
So Tom Baldino, did he sort of look real in that moment, do you think, then?
Oh, absolutely. He is genuine. And just following up on Will's note, I mean, he looks like an academic, too. I mean, I can slot him in any of my faculty colleagues here at Wilkes, and people wouldn't know the difference. So, yeah, I mean, he is that kind of everyman in a way, and he is the anti-Corbett in terms of appearance and style. And voters do seem to, especially in Pennsylvania, vacillate between one extreme and the other. So, Wolf is the maybe the right person at the right time to unseat an incumbent governor in a history of never having done that in Pennsylvania. So at least since the constitutional amendment in 68.
We have an email from Richard who has a pointed question for both of you. He says, he asked, did either of the guests endorse any of the candidates in the elections?
I don't endorse candidates as a matter of policy. I've been doing my blog, which is a little bit more opinionated, for the last 10 years, and I've never endorsed candidates. And in fact, I'm a registered independent, so I couldn't even vote. And frankly, I will sometimes happy to tell people who I voted for. I'll honestly say I'm not sure, since I didn't have to decide, I'm not sure which of the candidates on last night's ballot I would have voted for. They were all you know, fairly close to each other, certainly in ideas. I think it was more, in the end, it was kind of more style because their substance was so similar.
And Tom Baldino?
I don't endorse candidates either, although I am a registered Democrat, and it was a tough decision. I ended up voting for Schwartz, if only because I was hoping that at some point that the Pennsylvania voters would have an opportunity to vote for a woman candidate for governor. But they're all four candidates were good candidates. They all had certain strengths, and certainly any one of them would have given would give Corbett a run for his money. And the general electorate in Pennsylvania favored Wolf. So at least the Democratic electorate in Pennsylvania favored Wolf. So we'll see where this goes.
We have folks calling in. If you want to join the conversation, the number is 1-888-477-9499. Let's go to Bob in Rittenhouse Square. Bob, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, this is Bob Rovner, former state senator. I want to say I love the show. It was an amazing election. You're right that Tom Wolf did an amazing job getting 50-some percent of the vote. And there's some things that never came out in the press. One is that Tom Wolf, for years, has been very generous to different people running for office, for the House, for the Senate, for Congress, for different county committees, sort of like Mayor Bloomberg did in New York and some of the other wealthy people. And not only did he give $10 million of his own money, but how about he had somebody donate $1 million who had confidence in him. He had people donate 200,000+, and he got a lot of small donations. So I'm really impressed with Tom Wolf. He was a wonderful Secretary of Revenue. But the governor, Tom Corbett, you can't sell him short, as you just said. He comes out of Central Casting, and Susan Corbett, who introduced him last night, who's right behind him when he spoke in Pittsburgh, is a great asset. She's been a wonderful First Lady. She came to Temple last week and said, it was our first time at Temple. I'm a trustee at Temple with Senator Mike Stack, and we're proud that he got, you know, won for lieutenant governor. So she came, said, I've never been at Temple, but Tom's dad went to Temple Law School, and my dad went to Temple Dental School. So no governor, as you know, has ever lost for re-election since 1970 when we first started elected two-term governors. In other words, before 70, you could only be elected for one term. So it'll be interesting. Tom Corbett will have all the money he needs. The people keep saying he's unpopular, but his ads were great. Like you talked about education. Their ad had Susan Corbett saying how they were both teachers. So I think if Pennsylvania is fortunate. We have two amazing candidates. And the other thing people don't realize, there was an election for lieutenant governor yesterday, but and that's separate in the primary, but in the general, they run together. In other words, Jim Cawley, who's been a wonderful lieutenant governor, will run with Tom Corbett, and Senator Mike Stack will run with Tom Wolf. So the only thing we know for sure, we're going to have a Tom be the governor in November, and you got to give Brendan Boyle a lot of credit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're gonna stick with our discussion of the governor's race here. But Senator, okay. Thank you so much for calling in and helping us to convey some of the election
love
results
your discussion
there and your analysis
the
of the. Yeah, thank you so much. And I want to talk about Governor Corbett a little bit more here. Of course, he won his primary. There wasn't a challenger. There was one early on, Bob Guzzardi, who didn't make it past the petition signature gathering phase. But Governor Corbett, when he delivered his victory speech last night, I think we might have gotten a little bit of a preview of what he's going to talk about during this election campaign too. Let's take a listen.
We have passed three balanced budgets, yes, on time. And we haven't raised taxes. In fact, we've scaled back the tax burdens on taxpayers. When I look at those facts, I know our campaign has the winning case.
Will Bunch, does that sound also like a campaign message?
Well, it certainly sounds like the message he's crafted. You know, I've been hearing his ads on the radio a lot recently, and like Bob Ravner said, they're very well done. They're very slick. They also are, you know, fairly factually challenged. Factcheck.org, the independent organization, really dinged his most recent ad. Basically, it centers, you know, he promised jobs when he ran for office in 2010. And the reality is that while the economy's been recovering nationally and Pennsylvania's had a small part of that, when you rank us against other states, we're about 47th by some measures, 45th in some other. We've really lagged other states in job creation. And he's trying to basically take numbers that the average voter who doesn't follow job statistics, you know, 150,000 jobs sounds impressive until you realize that all the neighboring states created many more jobs. He also doesn't talk about all the school teacher and public jobs that were cut under his administration. A school teacher job is a job, last time I checked. So, you know, he's got very good ads, but he's got a very difficult story to tell.
And Tom, out in your part of the state outside of the Philadelphia area, how does a message like what we just heard from Governor Corbett there play?
I think the governor is going to be challenged. Yes, he's balanced the budget for 3 years, and yes, he's kept his no tax increase pledge. But for yet another year, Pennsylvania's revenues have declined, and so building the next fiscal year budget is going to be a real challenge. And he's looking at either cutting more programs or going back on his no tax increase pledge. And if he decides to cut programs or cut spending in mandated programs that are delivered at the county level, there's going to be more tax shifting. And at some point, you know, something has to give. And so it will be difficult for the governor to continue with the kind of message that he's sending without being challenged, as Will noted, by factcheck.org and his ads. He certainly will be challenged on the campaign trail by Tom Wolf. You can count on that.
Do you think, Tom, that we've got a lot of Toms running around here. But Tom Baldino, do you think that do you think that Tom Wolf was the opponent that Tom Corbett wanted?
Oh, I doubt that. Mainly because he doesn't have a track record of voting on anything that Corbett and the Republican Party can easily attack. In the past, as McCord pointed out, Wolf's affiliation with the former mayor of York and the relationship there with the African-American situation there. Anyway, you know, there are things that you can accuse Wolf of as guilt by association, but there's little else. Other than his business practices, of course, those were raised during the race, and Wolf fended those off fairly deftly. So, of all the candidates, you know, this is one who doesn't have a big bullseye on his back for having done anything in the past that might call attention to his position on issues, other than the ones that Wolf himself has identified.
Yeah, Tom Corbett desperately wanted to run against Alison Schwartz. In fact, again, we were talking about how Corbett's ads are pretty smart. It was fascinating. He decided to spend some of his campaign war chest to run ads about the Democratic primary candidates. And if you listen closely, you could tell what he was going for. His ads would start out off with this, you know, satanic music, and it's like, Alison Schwartz is a liberal. She supports Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Well, think who's listening now. People, you know, people who are going to vote in the Democratic primary are going to hear that. They love to hear those things. They want a liberal. They want somebody who supports Obama. So, you know, he sounded like he's criticizing Schwartz when actually he was trying to boost her status in the Democratic primary. And then the ad would switch over to attacks about Tom Wolf on his ethics, things that might possibly trouble a Democratic primary voter. And, you know, they were so looking forward to a race against Alison Schwartz. I mean, they felt that a woman from the evil big city of Philadelphia would play very badly among rural voters in the central part of the state, and they were going to make a big deal about her involvement with Planned Parenthood, which would have been an interesting and tough issue to play on in the campaign trail if that happened. But like Tom Baldino said, I mean, Wolf doesn't really have a record other than a solid record as a businessman. There's really nothing there politically for Corbett to make too much hay out of.
We have just about a minute or so before we go to a break, but we talked about same-sex marriage and the decision yesterday that came on Election Day, ruling that Pennsylvania's ban on same-sex marriage is unconstitutional. Do you see that issue coming up during the campaign, Will?
I do, because I think first of all, Governor Corbett has a difficult decision about whether he's going to hop on the bandwagon here or whether he's going to continue to fight the judge's decision. Also, the other thing, and I'm actually writing a column about this that's going to run in tomorrow's Daily News if you want to go out and buy it. But he's also Pennsylvania just lags horribly in other protections for gays and lesbians in terms of workplace protection, that sort of thing. And Corbett recently surprised people a few months ago by saying he would take a look on that. But what's the follow through? I think people may pressure him to say, are you going to adopt a more gay-friendly agenda for Pennsylvania?
And Tom Baldino, just quickly here, how will that gay marriage issue play outside of the major metropolitan areas here?
Well, it'll definitely energize the Democratic base, not just in the Philadelphia area, but also across the state. There are so many people who, and it's not just Democrats now, but Republicans who support the concept of equal treatment of gay couples. And I doubt that it'll hurt Tom Wolf, and certainly should help him.
Okay, but we're going to have to pick it up here later. But we're talking about election results with Will Bunch of the Philadelphia Daily News and Tom Baldino, political science professor at Wilkes University. If you have a question or comment about our discussion, you can call 1-888-477-9499. Also, you can send an email to radiotimes@whyy.org or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be back after a break.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the Museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
On the next Fresh Air, how the Koch brothers became America's most powerful and private dynasty. We talk with Daniel Shulman, author of a new biography of the Koch family. We'll discuss how they created the second largest privately held company in America and the roles family members played in the John Birch Society, the Libertarian Party, and the Tea Party. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY. how do we engineer affordability?
A prosthetic leg can range from $15,000 to several hundred thousand dollars, depending on the quality of the limb you're looking at. Just completely out of the reach of the normal person.
Two engineering students discuss how to design low-cost prosthetics and how to make them accessible to the world's most vulnerable people. It's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times. I'm Jeff Brady in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking about the election yesterday with Will Bunch and Tom Baldino. You know, Pennsylvania missed out on the opportunity to have its first woman governor in yesterday's election. Allison Schwartz, the member of Congress from Montgomery County and the Philadelphia area, she didn't perform as well as people thought she would. She talked about the issue of women in Pennsylvania politics during her speech last night. Let's listen to that.
I believe that women's accomplishments and our experiences and our talents have to be utilized in every way. And I believe that they will, not today, not this year in Pennsylvania, but certainly in someday in the future, we will have a woman governor here and across the country.
Will Bunch, you can tell she got a little emotional there at the end. What happened with Allison Schwartz's race?
Well, I agree with her. It is sad. Pennsylvania's record generally on electing female candidates, it's an area where I think many of us want to see the state do better. So there is that. However, there's the issue of women candidates, and then there's how individual women do as candidates when they run. And Allison Schwartz did not run a good campaign strategically. She waited too long and allowed Tom Wolf to define himself. But the other thing, and I think some people missed on this, but I think it's an important point, I've been watching Pennsylvania politics closely for about two decades now, and I've seen the Democratic Party definitely kind of drift slowly to the left and to become more progressive over those 20 years. In 2000, the party thought it was a good idea to nominate a guy named Ron Klink to run against Ron Santorum, who was pro-NRA, anti-abortion. Yeah, I know. He was Rick Santorum light, and that used to be the Democratic Party thinking in this state. And that's changed. I mean, it was fascinating to me to see four candidates, all of whom were fairly progressive. Schwartz, actually, on that basis, she had kind of the biggest problem with progressive voters because she's been in Congress now since for about a decade, and she has a number of votes that kind of rankled people on the left. She voted with the banks on a bankruptcy bill. She supported the NSA, which is very unpopular with liberals, and she voted recently to cut food stamps, the only Democrat in the Pennsylvania delegation to do that, and I think some of that backfired on her.
Tom Baldino, with Allison Schwartz out of Congress at the end of her term, that leaves Pennsylvania with an all-male delegation, 20 dudes and no women in Pennsylvania. Does that tell us anything?
It tells us that we continue a long trend that Pennsylvania, as well noted, we in Pennsylvania have a poor track record in electing women to not just statewide offices, but to congressional seats and the Senate. Forget it. There's never been a U.S. senator who's been a woman from Pennsylvania. The one future star of the Democratic Party and a woman is Kathy Kane, and she's confronting some issues now because of the way she handled that investigation.
This is the investigation of members of the General Assembly expecting cash gifts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. But Pennsylvania is basically a purple state. I don't care how you want to slice and dice it. The across the state, there are pockets of deep blue and deep red, but the average voters tend to be more slightly right of left of center. And so in order for any candidate to win, most of the our typical candidate is more centrist, and with the rare exception of a Rick Santorum, right? And so if we're going to elect a woman candidate to a statewide office, it's going to be someone like Kathy Kane, who is moderate. I see her as a moderate Democrat. And she was, at least until a few months ago, a strong candidate to win a governor's race here in the future. But that remains to be seen.
We have folks who want to join the conversation here. Let's go to Deborah from Philadelphia. Deborah, welcome to Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am hoping that in the general election, the Wolf campaign shines a light on the policies that are really, to me, based on cronyism by Corbett. The fact that he has missed opportunities to collect revenue from our oil and gas industry in this state is appalling, and it's out of line with what other states have done, and the fact that he's used taxpayer dollars to hire private law firms to defend our same-sex marriage laws up to this point, because our own state attorney general agreed with the decision that came down yesterday that this is not worth defending. So I'm hoping that those issues are highlighted, because when he talks, as you played in his acceptance speech, or that he has, lowered taxes, he's mostly made sure that, you know, oil and gas industry aren't paying the same usage tax that they do in other states.
Thank you for calling.
Answer off the air.
Thank you for calling in, Deborah. And Will Bunch, that issue of taxing gas mostly, but oil and gas in Pennsylvania, that's probably going to be part of the election, huh?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's going to be a huge issue in this race. Because basically, I think there's a pretty broad consensus among Pennsylvania voters on fracking, which is I think most people support the practice. You know, a few people would like to see it banned, but most people support fracking. But they want two things. They want to see fracking taxed the way it is in all the other states that produce oil and gas, and they want to see real environmental safeguards so it's done safely. And clearly the Corbett administration, it has dropped the ball on both fronts. You know, he's not supported a real tax on the fracking industry, and environmental protection has been very lax under Corbett. So it's not surprising that you saw all of the Democratic candidates in this primary hit Corbett over that issue. And in fact, all of them basically pushed a variation of the same scheme, which is let's tax fracking and let's use the money to pay for schools, because those are the two things that probably two-thirds of voters in the state support, if not more.
It looks like we could easily spend the whole hour on the governor's race. It's going to be an interesting race now through November. But I want to talk about a couple of other races, too. The 13th Congressional District race, the Democratic primary, this is to replace Alison Schwartz. And State Representative Brendan Boyle beat former member of Congress Marjorie Margolies, who I heard somebody refer to her, even without her name, just saying Chelsea Clinton's mother-in-law. But I was interesting listening to Brendan Boyle in his speech. He said that now there will be a member of Congress with $50,000 in student loan debt who will take this issue seriously. And Tom Baldino, has a candidate ever used his student loan debt as something to campaign on?
No, not that I know of, but it's certainly something that will be resonating among other recent college graduates, so they'll be able to say, somebody who's in my shoes. Boyle ran an interesting campaign and capitalized on his brother's race as well in the same area, part of the district, the 13th district, and his base in Philadelphia to overwhelm Margolies. And she was another one of these candidates like Alison Schwartz, who was a presumptive front runner when all of this began months and months ago. And Margolies, in some ways like Schwartz, kind of sat back on those initial assumptions that she was leading in, and didn't run as good a campaign as she could have. And she certainly brought in the big guns with the Clintons, but wasn't nearly as effective. Boyle had a better ground game.
And Will Bunch, this is the 13th Congressional District. Should we assume that because Brendan Boyle won that he's going to be the next member of Congress? Is that heavily enough Democratic to assume that?
Well, I mean, the congressional districts in Pennsylvania are ridiculously gerrymandered. In fact, I live in the 7th Congressional District, which looks like one of those butterfly Rorschach tests. It's crazy. And this is a district that was drawn up to be Democratic, and it's almost certain, barring some unexpected event, to go Democratic probably in the fall. I just want to add about Boyle really quickly. I mean, Boyle ran a very good campaign, but you really saw the power of you know, two things in that race. One is the Democratic Party machine in Philadelphia, which just keeps chugging along, and the other is the power of labor unions, which supported him. And I mean, the bottom line is this was an extremely low turn. I don't know what the final numbers were, but there was an embarrassingly low voter turnout in this race. And when that happens, it's a chance for organization, groups that are organized, like labor unions, like the Democratic Party Committee, to really show their stuff. And that's what they did for Brendan Boyle.
We had a tweet from Chris who gets into that issue of voter turnout. He says, Philly should dominate Pennsylvania politics, but can't unify or turn out huge numbers of voters. And he calls that a tragedy.
I don't know if there were a lot of candidates in this race who had like a really strong appeal. I mean, Philadelphia had a sizable voter turnout in 2002 when Ed Rendell was on the ballot because he's a beloved figure in the state. There was no Ed Rendell type figure on the ballot, and that was probably reflected in the local turnout numbers to some extent.
Tom Baldino, let's turn to the 8th Congressional District. That's in Bucks County and a little bit of Montgomery County. Kevin Strauss beat Shaughnessy Naughton in the Democratic primary, and now he faces the GOP incumbent, Congressman Mike Fitzpatrick. What's that race going to look like?
It's going to be another very close race. Strauss narrowly beat Naughton. Last numbers I saw, 51-49. And Fitzpatrick has been holding on to that seat the last two cycles. Strauss brings something to the table as a vet, and it's going to be close. But absent a presidential race at the top of the ticket, Democrats across the state are going to face the same problem as they did in 2010, which is a low turnout. Democrats, and this goes back to the something Will said, that Democrats in the aggregate turn out in lower numbers than Republicans, and that's not just in Pennsylvania. So Democrats have to do far more to generate the base, turn out that base. And unless the Democratic Party and those who are weak partisan Democratic identifiers are motivated to turn out, Fitzpatrick will hold that seat. If there's a larger turnout, Strauss might be able to unseat the incumbent.
Let's go back to the telephone, and we have Larry from West Philly. Larry, welcome to Radio Times.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate this conversation. I'm sitting here thinking about the process over the product. I received an email recently from the Democratic Party supporting a petition to overturn Citizens United. Yet the state senator who was on a few minutes ago said that someone gave Tom Wolf $1 million, another gave $200,000. And so apparently the rich decided this primary too. And so I'm just wondering from the guests, is this process ever going to change? And if so, given that email that I received, is this going to be a part of the Democratic platform this cycle? Thank you.
Will Buncher, is there any, you think campaign finance reform is going to be any part of this discussion over the next?
No, and that's quite unfortunate. In fact, that's what I wrote about in today's Daily News, campaign finance. And I did write about this fact, and the caller is absolutely correct. Tom Wolf, in addition to spending $10 million of his own money, which is a constitutionally protected right of candidates to use as much of their own money as they want. But in addition to that, fairly unique to Pennsylvania and just 10 other states, is that we have no limits on campaign contributions. So in this case, a friend of Tom Wolf, who served on a department store board of directors with him, gave him more than $1 million to support his campaign. And, you know, in this race, you know, we've seen two models. One, we've seen a wealthy candidate who, you know, crowded out all the TV time and cast a great image for himself and won the election. And he's running against the candidate, Tom Corbett, who raises millions of dollars from special interests like the oil and gas companies. They're two different styles, but neither of them serves the public very well. There should be campaign finance reform in Pennsylvania, but there's really no serious movement towards that right now.
We just have a couple minutes left here. Let's talk about the 12th Congressional District. That's another one that could be competitive. Businesswoman Erin McClelland has been named the winner there, and she is going to face the incumbent, Republican Representative Keith Rothfuss, in the general election. Is that right that it's no.
Oh, no, sorry. No,
is that going to be a close race, or is that, do we know?
I mean, I'm dubious. I think there's not going to be too many close congressional races in Pennsylvania. I think, and part of that is what Tom Baldino was just saying, that Just historically, Republicans do a much better job of turning out their voters in midterm elections than the Democrats do. Democrats, for whatever reason, tend to be probably because they're younger, higher proportion minorities. These are people who tend to vote more in presidential years than in off years. So I think that's a problem. The other problem, as I mentioned before, is gerrymandering. These districts have been drawn with just a ridiculous amount of attention to making sure they'll be safe for one party or the other. It's an incumbent protection racket, basically. And as a result, in some districts, I mean, I live in Delaware County, which has gone Democratic in every presidential election since the 90s, and yet they can't even come up with credible candidates to challenge the Republican incumbent in Delaware County. So I think you see some of the obstacles to change.
Tom Baldino, we have, about 5.5 months until November. What's one big thing that you're going to be looking for in that time period?
Oh, I always talk about following the money. And as we just heard, Pennsylvania is among the most lax states in regulating and any form of regulation of campaign financing. So, and then Tom Wolf just demonstrated that if you spend enough money, you can win an election. So, with enough, if a candidate, and if assuming both candidates raise a sizable war chest, this it won't come close to rivaling Kentucky, which I just heard is the potential of spending costing $30 million in the general election for the Senate seat there. But, you know, we could see a very expensive gubernatorial race here in the state. And the candidate that raises and spends the most money may end up the winner. So I'm going to be tracking the money. And and also, which candidate makes the better case for the two issues that we discussed earlier? One is education, and the other is regulation of gas. Not just the regulation, but the taxing of gas. I think both issues play better for Wolf. Corbett will have to do a fair amount of soft shoe tap dancing around his position on those issues. But with the right amount of money and the right crafting of the ads, it's amazing what you can do to convince people otherwise of that past position.
That is Tom Baldino. He's a professor of political science at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre and interim dean of the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Science. He's also the co-author of two books. We're going to mention one of them here. It's called Voting Rights, Disputed Elections, and Election Reform, a documentary and a reference guide. And here in the studio, we had Will Bunch, a senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News. He blogs about local and national politics at attitude.com. Thank you both for being here today.
Thanks, Jeff.
I'm Jeff Brady, filling in for Marty Moskowain.